This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. A handful of races could be the key to a legislative overhaul in Wisconsin this fall. New maps have made legislative seats more competitive than they've been in more than a decade. We are here talking with J.R. Ross, WisPolitics editor. He's been studying legislative changes, and he's going to tell us what to watch for. Welcome to Newsmakers.
Thanks for having me.
We see you every week on Rewind, yes. So it's been a pleasure to have you here on Newsmakers. I understand somewhat of a passion project for you, studying the legislative map changes.
Oh, I'm a dork about redistricting. So this has been fascinating. It's also really a huge sea change for Wisconsin because Republicans have dominated this map-making process for a decade. And so they've built a majority based off those maps. They hardened it with good candidates, good resources, good messages, and then reinforced it with a second round of maps. Now, though, we have this new map from the Supreme Court. Well, ordered because the Supreme Court threw out the old one. Now Democrats have a chance
at the majority. We'll be talking about
the chance. But they need the right factors to go with the fall in place this fall to make it work.
So where can we find your work? I know you've been looking at each individual district. Where can people find the complete work?
On our homepage, wispolitics.com, we have links to both the Assembly and Senate maps. Each district's broken down by its performance from 2022, the candidates who have announced. We make notes about people who retired, people who have moved in. These maps, they caused some interesting developments with lawmakers because they went, wait a second, I'm in a district now that's not so great for me in the numbers. I might move over here. Like William Penterman, for example, he moved districts because he's drawn into a very Democratic one and went, wait, this open seat over here in Columbus, I know Columbus, I can run here in a good Republican seat, not in this Democratic one.
Okay, so one of many examples. In this housing market, people putting for sale signs on their homes here.
Yeah.
So 300-plus candidate filings in half the state Senate, 99 Assembly seats. Those candidate filings were due last Monday. I know today the Elections Commission is deciding what goes on the ballots in terms of the names of candidates. Was there anything really surprising to you in those candidate filings?
No, the agency staff had recommended against really any of the big races to watch. They really did not say that anyone should be kicked off the ballot. There are a couple of, I don't say minor candidates, but they're not expected to be a big factor this fall in the control of the Senate or the Assembly. So nothing huge in those filings that I saw.
Okay. Is it more candidates than normal, the 300-plus?
I don't look at the total number of candidates, but it's more primaries than I've ever seen for incumbents. I think there are 4 Democrats and 22 Republicans who face primary challenges this fall. Part of that is the maps. I mean, there are people like a Karen Hurd, a freshman lawmaker who from the Eau Claire area, drawn into a seat with a Democrat, Jody Emerson, who went, wait a second, this is a Democratic seat. Here's a Republican one right next door. She's moving to that district, but then the Abbotsford mayor went, wait a second, I'm kind of interested in that seat. So now we have a primary there on the Republican side. So it's interesting to watch that development. There also were pairs from the maps that were caused because governor, remember, the Supreme Court threw out the maps. The governor proposed maps. Republicans said, hey, these maps are a better deal for us than the alternative, which is the Supreme Court drawing the maps, liberal majority there. So they embraced these maps, but they also created some pairs. Nate Gustafson and Michael Schrah on the Fox Valley area, they're running against each other. There are examples there of primaries that were forced because they went, I don't want to give up my seat.
And 2 legislators facing each other. We don't often see that.
Yeah, so now I've got to run against somebody else from my own party, a little bit of kind of a inter-party warfare. Also, one of my favorite ones is I keep forgetting that Marshfield, Wisconsin had 2 state lawmakers in 2 different districts. So you have Donna Rosar and John Spiros, who are both from Marshfield.
And kind of veterans. They've been in the legislature for a while.
They're in a primary, and a 3rd Republican is running as well. Again, the maps have changed. Saw an opportunity, he's going to run. So it's really fascinating dynamic. In some of these races, you go like just race by race, what's going to play out. Interesting to see who's got the best infrastructure, who's got the most money, who gets the most groups behind him or her. It's going to be a fascinating primary season.
I can hear the passion in your voice here. So in simplest terms, what's at stake for Democrats this fall?
The opportunity. So if you look at the Assembly map, there's a path to win the majority, which you could not say about the Republican maps last decade. It would take a miracle of historic proportions of politics to even get close to the majority. These maps at least have the opportunity there. The question is, what's the environment like? How good are your candidates? And how good is your money and your message? So if you have
Democrats
an environment.
Democrats have the money.
Oh, yeah. Ben Wickler, state party chair, has been a phenomenal fundraiser. Governor Evers has been a great partner with him. They have raised a ton of money lately, more than Republicans have. But that alone is not enough. You have to have good candidates, a good message, and the right environment. So this fall, is it going to be a Biden victory, the top of the ticket for in Wisconsin, or a Trump one? That has a huge deal because our policy has been so nationalized, right? Like, it's hard to break through and have a identity unique from the top of the ticket if you're a Democrat or Republican. So that'll dictate things. You know, the messages, what issues are going to really be in play? I know it's already mid-June, but tell me in October how much gas costs. Tell me how many border crossings we have. What's inflation look like? Those things.
Do you think that's going to matter in state legislative races?
Because a lot of it drifts down the ticket. Now, Democrats have put together, I believe, 97, 99 assembly districts they have a candidate in. All 16 Senate ones, they want a bubble-up effect. They're arguing they can take candidates at the local level who can go do doors and have a presence to help Tammy Baldwin and Joe Biden.
Now, bring more Democrats to the polls, basically.
We haven't seen that really work before, but it's the theory, you know.
It's a different era, yeah. Really, in elections. And what's online for Republicans?
Defending, being the bulwark against, you know, Democrats. I mean, they're looking at the situation, okay, Governor Evers is not going anywhere in the next 2 years. Supreme Court is now a liberal majority in Wisconsin. They want to hold against the tide, and they're making the argument to their donors and voters of, hey, we don't want to become Minnesota or Illinois. We want to try and keep, you know, what we have right now. So if they change, leadership changes, it changes the dynamic in talking about taxes in Wisconsin, expanding Medicaid in Wisconsin, marijuana. I mean, all these issues that they push back against, suddenly now Democrats could have an opportunity to have what they want to see, not a compromise or trying to hold back Republicans from what they want to do.
So let's dig into the key races. And before we do that, I want to just get an explanation from you. When we're talking about these nine competitive races in the assembly, what does competitive mean in a race?
There's a chance to flip it. So now, obviously, a race where you go, okay, it's 50-50 top of ticket, that's a true toss-up. But some, if it's like, if you say, okay, the traditional performance here is like 51% Republican, that's one you could win as a Democrat. It's not like a guaranteed victory. Usually, if you're like around 55% for a seat, those are hard to lose. Like, I mean, you really got to screw up or have the wrong environment, you know.
The wrong candidate.
Yeah, stuff like that. But in that kind of 52 to 55 range, those are lean. Like, those are ones you kind of should win. But my toss-ups are really like 49, 51, 52, 48, in that neck of the woods.
Okay. Well, let's start with talking about the 92nd. Mm-hmm. So again, seven of the nine seats that we'll be talking about lean Republican. In the 92nd is in that Menominee, Chippewa Falls area. What are you watching for in that race?
One, Democrats, can they outperform the top of the ticket? Can they pick up a Republican seat? So if you look at the big picture in the assembly, there are 99 seats. Republicans have to win all 46 kind of strong GOP seats, ones that are in that 54-55% range.
And this one is 54.2 with Clint Moses.
From 2022, this is more kind of a, not quite that 55, so it's mm-hmm. It's a chance. But of these nine listed, Republicans have to win four of the nine to stay at 50 votes. Like, that's all they got to do is win four of nine. For Democrats, you've got to win all 44 strong seats and six of these nine to get to 50, all right? So that
six
means it's
them.
A harder path. And if you look at the list, there's a little Republican lean, a lot of them. So I'm talking about, like, what's going to happen in November. If you have a Tony Evers-like performance from 2022 winning by 3.4 points, that makes it easier for Democrats. If you have a 21,000-vote margin, like in 2020, top of ticket, that makes it harder for Democrats. So here, Clint Moses, incumbent. It'd be interesting to watch Joe Plouffe, actually a former state lawmaker, coming back after being gone for a while. This is one that, if you're a Democrat, it's a reach. But it's the kind of reach you have to maybe find a way to get to that 50 votes. And if you look at these nine, it's any combination of them, you know. So it's going to be interesting to watch what happens, how strong these incumbents. People are moving a little bit, like Schneider in the one we're going to talk about. So he's moving, but it's the same seat he had before.
So Rob Schneider is in the 85th. He's a Republican legislator moving.
Yeah. So it's like a big onion, a big puzzle, really. How these pieces fit together in the end when I look at the numbers.
So talking about the 30th, that's a Republican incumbent. Mm-hmm. He's also a joint finance member, Representative Zimmerman. I'm sorry. Why is this race on the list?
Again, it's a little bit of a reach for Democrats. So it's just past that kind of where you should be. Good environment, right candidate, right money. It'll help. Now, I don't know all these candidates just yet, how strong they are.
Zimmerman's been in the legislature for a while.
A wealthy candidate, a member of the Finance Committee, ran for state Senate in 2018, lost a special election for the Senate seat. But in this one, again, you're kind of like, all right, Democrats, if you really want to overperform, you'd pick up a seat like this. Can you do that? Can you find a way to win this kind of a seat? It's going to be a challenge for them. I would look elsewhere for their victories, but this one.
That's maybe not the one.
Maybe.
So you said Snyder in the 52nd. He's one of those legislators for sale sign in the House,
yes,
moving across the map. Anything? He's an incumbent.
Yes. 85th Yi Zong. I'm sorry if I'm saying that correctly. I believe he's trying to be the first Hmong American elected to the state legislature in Wisconsin. Here's one where it's a kind of a toss-up, little slight Republican lean seat, where you have an incumbent who represented the area before, but he got drawn into a different seat. So he's moving, but it's really his territory. And this is an interesting area of the state. So in my time covering Wisconsin politics, if you look at the map of the state, like, the suburbs have gotten bluer over the years, right? I mean, especially in the Trump era, the Republicans have lost area there. The cities have gotten bluer. A lot of the rest of the state's gotten redder, so especially rural areas. Wausau has been a tough nut to crack for Democrats for a long time. When I first got here, there were Democrats elected or represented Wausau. That was kind of a, I want to say, a given they'd have the Wausau seat, but they were in pretty good shape there. It's not the case anymore.
The Democratic mayor just lost a re-election bid.
Yeah, so I caution against looking at the spring elections versus fall too much because it's a different electorate.
Sure.
You know, twice as many people are going to turn out in November versus what did this April, but still, it's indicative of the challenge Democrats have had in some of these areas. Here is one that, yes, it's got a slight Republican lean, but can you find that right combination? Oh, by the way, Donald Trump does well in northern Wisconsin. He does well in western Wisconsin. So like the 92nd with Clint Moses and the 30th with Zimmerman, these are like Trump areas. So whereas Democrats would go, okay, we look good in the suburbs, they know they have problems in places like Wausau, like western Wisconsin. They go, okay, how do we figure out how to crack this nut?
There's no incumbent running in the 88th. That's a district near Green Bay. Does that, because there's no incumbent, does that make that race more of a toss-up?
Sure. No, we don't know. Now, the names are great. Phil Collins and Ben Franklin.
Yes. I mean, like
that right away has got some attraction to it. But I am curious to see with this seat, you know, where does the environment go? This and the next one, next couple are really ones you go, okay, the environment could push this seat one way or another and make it definitely more in play than it already is.
Mm-hmm. The 94th, that's northern La Crosse County and southern Trempealeau County, historically has been one of the state's most competitive districts, right?
So you have a rematch essentially from 2022. Steve Doyle is a longtime Democrat and a member of the Assembly, also is a member of the La Crosse County Board. Fascinating note here, Steve Doyle won this seat of Mike Hipsch, former Assembly Speaker, joined the Walker administration. Ryan Hipsch is Mike's kid. They ran each other 2 years ago. Republicans really went after Steve Doyle. He won comfortably.
A lot of money in that,
yes,
race.
Comfortably by Wisconsin standards, like by 900 votes. But again, this is one top of the ticket is going to matter. So Steve Doyle has been able to craft a reputation, a little bit of a mark outside of the Democratic, normal, like generic Democratic profile. But can you keep doing that when Trump's atop the ticket? He drives so much. Trump drives so much from, you know, how people feel about stuff. Can you get past that? Also worth noting that most Democrats in Wisconsin saw good things out of these maps. I mean, more opportunities, better things. Steve Doyle is one of the few that did not. his seat didn't get better. They didn't really help him out a whole lot.
More competitive for him, harder to win?
It's kind of like right where it's been. And again, depending on what benchmark you use, some call this a 50-50 seat. It's had a Republican lean to it sometimes. But Steve Doyle will likely have to run a better than the top of the ticket to keep his seat in the Assembly where he's been since a special election in 2011.
Interesting. The 89th Assembly District includes what, Ashwaubenon and West Green Bay. Again, no incumbent running there. What are you looking for in that race?
Again, this is like the other Green Bay seat, okay? So Green Bay has been a decent place for Republicans, in part because the maps have split Democrats up quite a bit in the right way. I say the right way, I'm talking about, like, if you're a Republican looking to maximize your performance with a map, the older seats concentrated all the Democrats they could in one Assembly seat and then peel off enough to make the other seats more Republican. Well, now they've redrawn these maps to have more competitive seats in Green Bay. There's definitely a Green Bay seat that should be won by Democrats, right? But now here's one that, okay, can they figure out a way to win this one? This is going to be a little bit better on the numbers for Democrats than the other.
It's almost 50-50.
Yes, than the 88th. But again, environment, top of the ticket. Green Bay has been decent for Trump, you know, and I don't talk about Trump a lot, but he does drive a lot of stuff. I mean, that's right. Just reality. And Biden is not really inspiring passion among voters. He's got definitely some problems. He's upside down in ways that you don't usually see a candidate, you know, for higher office who's competitive in the polls.
Low approval ratings, right.
Which shows you that Donald Trump has both good and bad for Republicans, and same with Joe Biden. So what I'm also watching, kind of a side note, let's say Biden and Trump are in the low 40s. Let's say because of Jill Stein and RFK Jr. and Cornel West, we don't see a 48-47 race or 49-48. We see a 42-41 or 43-42. Okay. Now what? Where do RFK Jr. voters
vote?
Go?
Right.
You'd assume Jill Stein and Cornel West that their votes are more liberal, but can you count on them voting for a Democrat? Maybe, maybe not.
Or do they vote at all in those races? Sure.
Senate race. Does Tammy Baldwin then have the coattails for these legislative races because she's a longtime incumbent? She's well known. But again, Eric Hovde, he hasn't won the nomination yet. There are three lesser known Republicans, I believe, on the ballot with him right now. We assume he's going to get through because he's got the party's endorsement and the money. But of those guys, if that race is happening for presidents in the low 40s, what do they do? Where do they end up? How do they run ahead of the top of the ticket? Do they have coattails? And that, again, plays in these races. You know, could have Tammy Baldwin, who you could argue has some crossover appeal. She's out on top of the ticket before. She won by 11 points in 2018, whereas Evers won by one. Can she pull some people across? That's a huge question. And again, in mid-June, I can't tell you. In mid-October, I should have a better idea what the dynamic is going
to
be. So
we'll have to do the show again.
Yeah,
So in the 61st, we have another Republican legislator who's moving, setting up a potential rematch from 2022, Bob Donovan.
Now, he also has a primary he's got to get through first. So Martin Gomez, I don't know Martin yet. I don't know how serious he's going to be, but it was an interesting example of Donovan was drawn into a Democratic district with Daniel Reamer, who actually is retiring now, not running again, and said, okay, wait a second, this one looks way better over here. Now, don't forget, Bob Donovan was on the Milwaukee City Council, then moved in the district.
Ran for mayor.
Yes, ran for mayor of Milwaukee, won this seat in the suburbs, and now is moving to a different suburb. Well, if he wins. If he wins, he'll run. So that's one thing that's important to know. You don't have to live in your district to
in
run for it. Or in the general election. So you just have to be a resident of that district when you take office.
Oh.
So you can hold off on buying the new house, but it could be a rush in December to find something.
Find an apartment.
So let's assume that Bob gets through the primary, right? Because Bob will have the support of the Republican Assembly Campaign Committee and some groups. Well, he beat Lou Anne Bird in a district 2 years ago that was a little bit more Democratic. So what's going to change this time? Well, Trump's on the ballot. Where does Trump do poorly? In the suburbs. So here's an example of a place where you could see more of a Trump effect in a suburban area than you saw 2 years ago.
Good, interesting one to watch. The maps drew the city of Sheboygan mm-hmm. into the same district for the first time since, I think, 2011. So what do you think that will be the impact of that race?
Democrats have to win this seat to have a legitimate path to 50. You can't lose a seat like this that leans Democratic. And I stress lean, you know, a little bit. Leans Democratic without
52.1%.
Without that one, tough to get to the majority, all right, even close to it. But, you know, Sheboygan, it was split for a very simple reason. It divided Democrats, made it easier for Republicans to hold those seats. Now they're all in one area. This is when, again, they got to win if they got a shot.
The 53rd, in the we were talking about this, former legislator, former Nina mayor, Dean Coffert, interested in coming back to Madison?
So here's one that Robin Voss, Assembly Speaker, he wants 50, obviously. He needs, though, more than 50 to actually govern the Assembly. What I mean by that is, look, we have the same issue with the Assembly that Republicans have in Congress and the House, where you have a segment of the Republican members who are not very willing partners of Robin Voss and what he wants to do. So if Robin comes back with 50 votes, and let's just assume that they win for now for this conversation, like, right, I'm not predicting who's going to win the Assembly. If Robin comes back with 50, that means how's he going to pass a budget with people who have voted no on everything he's wanted to do for the last 2 or 4 years, like a Scott Allen in Waukesha, for example? That's not governable. You need 53, 54, 55. So Robin went out and recruited Dean Coffert. Dean actually voted against Act 10, which was kind of like a litmus test in Wisconsin politics. Kind of a moderate Republican. But this is a Democratic-leaning seat. You need that kind of a candidate.
He's pretty well known in his area.
Was mayor for, like, I think 8 years there. So you need, if you're Robin Voss, you need to have a couple of those pickups or define it because it was a Republican seat before, but you need that kind of a seat to have a governable majority. Now, complicating all this is that some of those strong Democratic seats include Todd Novak, as a Republican from Southwest Wisconsin, Dodgeville. His seat is like 54% Democratic. But he's a Republican incumbent. He's run above the top of the ticket before. So again, Democrats can't lose that seat and win a majority. How does Todd Novak do? Can he really do it again?
He's got some name recognition going for him there.
But things have changed so much, right? We're so nationalized. Somebody has argued to me that a Democrat in Wisconsin is no different than a Democrat in Pennsylvania or Colorado or Georgia anymore. And the same for Republicans. We're almost so all the same. It's all like red and blue, right? Now, another one that complicates things for Democrats is Jesse Rodriguez. Drawn into a Democratic-leaning seat, Robin Voss, from what I was told, really recruited her to come run again because she's like the one Republican who will probably win that seat. She's run up at the top of the ticket before. In 2022, she outdid Tim Michaels by several points. Can she do it again? And if she wins that seat, which is hers, I mean, she was elected to it, but drawn to be a Democratic one. If she wins that seat, again, it causes that this whole chain effect with these numbers where the puzzle gets more difficult for Democrats without her seat.
So let's shift to the Senate. I know you're watching really four kind of competitive races in the Senate. Not that all the races aren't important, but these are the four you're watching. The 30th in the Green Bay area had three incumbents drawn into it, and none of them decided to run.
So one, because Andre Jacques is from the first Senate district. So here's interesting side note. We don't know for sure what the law says, but there's an opinion from the Attorney General from 1980-something that says if you're elected to a seat and the maps change and you're drawn out of it, you keep that district until the next election. It's never been tested in court. But Andre is drawn in the first district. Anybody in an odd-numbered seat in the Senate has that seat until 2026. They got to make a decision then. They're going to move or whatnot. Andre's running for Congress right now, the 8th Congressional District. Other two Republicans, Eric Wimberger, moved to the 2nd Senate District or is going to run
more
for that one.
More favorable Republican.
Much more. And he did that after Rob Coles, who had been the senator for the 2nd District for 20-some, back to the mid-80s, I believe, mid-90s, I'm sorry. He'd already said he's going to move to that seat and run because that was his seat. Well, once Eric Wimberger said, I'm running for this, Rob said, I'm going to retire. So really, it shows the impact of the maps that they were looking for ways to enhance their chances. And one guy said, that's a better seat for me. I don't care that you're already there and you're my caucus mate. That's better for me. It's selfish. Kind of a jerky thing to do, people told me, but it's also what politics, I mean, that's the reality of politics. You have to have an opportunity to win, and Eric saw that and moved there, or is moving to that seat. So now you have an open seat. It leans Democratic. Again, depending on how you define things or look at it, but it's one that Democrats need a combination of these four seats to set up the combination of 20. Miracles happen. I don't count on them in politics very often.
You call this a miracle
win
for them?
No, I'm talking about the big picture of like this fall. Yeah, anything can happen. Democrats can win enough seats to flip a 22-10 majority with one vacancy. They should win. Lena Taylor was in the Senate, became a circuit court judge in Milwaukee. So her seat should go. So let's say 22-11 to start. In theory, yeah, Democrats could win six seats. In reality, it's not going to happen this fall. There just aren't the opportunities unless there's a total, creating the Republican brand. So let's just focus on these four because they set up in 2026, which then is the opportunity to actually flip the chamber.
That two-step process, sure.
Now, if you don't win all four, you're okay. You can get there. If you win just two, that's really tough. That makes it challenging. So for Democrats, they want three. Three gives them a pretty good chance for 2026. The 30th and the 18th are ones they really
Let's talk about the 18th. You call that a top pickup opportunity for Dems.
Because it's an open seat. They took that district and basically ran along Lake Winnebago to grab part of Oshkosh, Neenah, Menasha, and Appleton. So in theory, it should be one of your best pickup opportunities. I mean, this is, basically all urban area. I mean, not big urban area, but still it's, not mostly, but a lot of Democrats there. So in this one, Kristi Alfheim, who ran in 20 last time, lost. A couple Republicans running. So Anthony Phillips and Blong Yang. I'm watching that primary who emerges. What's that person's profile like? And then how do they overcome those numbers? Again, what's the environment like? There's still the Fox Valley. Abortion is a huge issue. It's been for Democrats for a long time. But the Fox Valley has been known for being quite Catholic. You know, like, is that is that a key salient issue in the Fox Valley, especially in Green Bay? 30th, Jamie Wall and Jim Raffner. Jamie Wall ran for Congress in, about a decade or 12 years ago, the 8th Congressional District. He, talking to Republicans and Democrats, they say he's a phenomenal fundraiser. He's an actual machine on the calls. They Republicans know he's a good candidate. They got Jim Raffner, who is Alouette's village president. So
he's been working on the Green Bay prison.
Yeah.
He's been in the headlines.
Republicans like him, a local official. But these two Democrats have to win these seats.
30th and the 18th.
To set them up. Now,
what about the 14th? Joan Baldwin, she's moving in to be in that district. And it seems like the Democrats are really targeting that seat.
Yes, because it goes not just from being a Republican seat to a Democratic one, but also it's not Joan's territory anymore. So Joan has to move from Markazan into the seat if she wins. It is all brand new territory. Now, there was a sliver of this, a little bit of the seat that was in her old district, but it's way more Democratic and it's new territory. So people out in like Richland Center in the western part of the seat don't know Joan Baldwin. Not that she isn't.
She's going to have to work pretty hard.
Yes. Has to introduce herself. So that's a challenge. So I don't know. In some ways, I'd almost say the 14th is more of a need pickup for Democrats because of the numbers alone. But those three, they're the ones are really, really focusing on.
What about the 8th? That's Senator Dewey Strobel's. Is that going to be a tough one for Dems?
So on numbers, you'd think it's a little bit of a reach. But this is a suburban district. Donald Trump is on the ballot. He has struggled in the suburbs, especially the Milwaukee suburbs. Dewey Strobel had a 60, almost 70% Republican seat before. He has governed, he's operated as a Republican in a seat that's 70% Republican.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now it's a 52-ish, I mean, again, which numbers you use, it's a slightly Republican seat. How does that, how did that electorate, how does it embrace Dewey Strobel versus his old seat? So Dewey's got some work to do. It'd be hard to moderate your image after all these years in the legislature, but he's got to find a way to connect on the issues that maybe could give him a better shot. Now, I'm not predicting he's going to lose or anything, but he has work to do to introduce himself to some voters and also to kind of pick up. Now, Jody, she ran in the special election for the 8th when it was a different seat. That district, that race is kind of hard to compare to the fall because it was a spring electorate and Janet Prosewicz won by 11 points the Supreme Court race. That drove the top of the ticket. So it was a pretty Republican seat before, but that made it more competitive because abortion was such a big issue, the Supreme Court race.
Dan Knodel was a known candidate, too, in that
area. All those things factored together.
So we've got through the key races. I just want to ask you a couple of questions as we wrap up. A lot of people thought these new maps would make for more bipartisanship in the legislature. Do you see more bipartisan, regardless of who wins, is there going to be more bipartisanship in the legislature?
Depends. There's an old saying in politics that, especially in the assembly, Wisconsin politics, that almost having 52 is better than having 62. The reason I say that is when you have 62 members in a caucus in the assembly, it's easier for 5, 6, 8, even 10 to say, you know what, I don't like this bill. I don't like that. It's not enough for me one way or another. I'm not going to vote on it. When you're 52, you have to be a team rowing the same direction. It creates cohesiveness. And sometimes a cohesive can also mean you're not going to compromise on things. Remember, the pressure is going to be on, and I again, not predict anything, but let's say Democrats, Republicans hold both houses, and they come back in like 52-ish in the assembly, 53 in the assembly. There'll be huge pressure on them to not give in to Tony Evers on tax increases if he proposes the next budget, on spending increases, on pick your issue. They will look at Republicans, the base, look at the assembly as and the Senate as the, you know, the dike against the sea, the blue sea coming at them.
Less bipartisanship with that in that scenario.
It just depends. You know, what's it look like?
What about the next state budget? What might change in those negotiations with different balance in the legislature?
I remember Robin Voss faces a recall and also a primary challenge. So let's assume he comes back, all right, just for this conversation. He has dug in that he will not expand Medicaid. No ands if or buts about it. So Robin Voss, the speaker, come January of 2025, they're not going to expand Medicaid. That's a red line for him. Unless Governor Evers can find something Robin wants so badly, he would trade it for, right? Like, that's what happens in politics.
Tax cuts?
Possibly. You know, I mean, there are ways to find compromise. But let's look at the last 6 years. Have Robin Voss and Tony Evers and, you know, Devin Lemon, Hugh and Scott Fitzgerald, have they forged great compromises? Now, this past cycle,
revenue,
big one, the shared revenue, brewers, there are examples of that. Those bills also are passed with Democratic help. So the shared revenue bill and the Brewers bill in the Senate needed Democratic help. Will they keep doing that? And again, that whole caucus dynamic. Republicans don't like requiring or using Democratic votes to pass things. It enables the Democrats to, if they do it the right way, to demand concessions. Republicans want to have a pure Republican bill where in the Senate, 17 GOP votes, 50 in the Assembly to get some done. That makes it a Republican stamp on that thing.
So my final question for you, what's your advice for voters in wading through all of this information and learning their new districts?
So we'll have stories about the summer and early.
On wispolitics.com.
We'll have interviews on the key primaries. Pay attention to local media. Find debates if you can. Watch them. They're always interesting. It's interesting. People hate negative ads, but studies have shown if like negative ads, people watch them are actually more informed and know what's going on.
There'll be a lot of ads in many of these races.
Mail pieces. You have to be an informed voter. You have to go research stuff. If you really want to know what's going on, you'll get a mailer that says, like, Joe Blow did this. He's a horrible person. And that little tiny type, that disclaimer, tell you, like, roll call, whatever. You have to go look at that vote and find out what it was. Sometimes it's just like a procedural vote on the budget, for example. But those things are used in these mail pieces.
A lot of work for voters.
Yes. So we do in our media, we try to do our best to keep people informed what's going on. Wisconsin Ida has interviews with candidates, so be informed. Do your best to try and wade through all the craziness and be informed.
Oh, a reminder to viewers, again, we can find your work on our website as a detail for this show, links to the Assembly races and Senate, and then also wispolitics.com, your complete work. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And thank you to the viewers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.